It is the most common finger injury in combat athletes. And it is one of the only injuries that I would say needs a proper break from any loading there. 90% of the time, if you're dealing with a hand injury, you should go to an OT, not a PT. They're the ones that know more about it. Yeah. The thing is, obviously, I specialize in hands and fingers because that's what I see the most. This might be a bit of a hot take on that. But I would say that the last one is probably the least dangerous. Climbing as a whole really overestimates the value of tape.
Welcome to another episode of the That's Not Real Climbing podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, and I'm excited to introduce my guest for today, Miguel Zevallos. Miguel is a climbing physical therapist who works closely with the Method Youth Climbing Team in the U.S. and recently worked his first youth nationals. In this episode, we'll learn about the danger of growth plate injuries in youth climbing athletes. We'll get a glimpse into youth ISO. We'll rank three of the most dangerous comp moves we've seen so far. And we'll hear about his own journey trying to make the Peruvian national team. I hope you enjoy this episode with Miguel. I'm excited to announce that my sponsor, Mad Rock Climbing, just came out with a brand new pair of shoes, the Remora Pro. I was so excited to try them on that even though I broke a toe on my right foot, I had to at least try on the left shoe, so I can definitely say that the Remora Pro is better than a rental shoe. But really, these are their softest shoe ever, which means you no longer need to worry about standing on sketchy volumes and comps. They also have a crazy 3D heel that allows you to get more surface area when heel hooking, and inserts that lock your heel into the shoe no matter how hard you're pulling. Feel free to message me if you have any questions about the shoes or sizing, and you can use the discount code NOTREALCLIMBER for 10% off your entire Mad Rock order. Back to the show. Yeah, is it like your own practice or?
Yeah, pretty much I work with different gyms. So that kind of like deal that I have is I think a pretty unique setting. I don't actually have an actual physical location. I just go to these different gyms that I have contracts with. And that's my full-time job, right? I just go to these different gyms. I go to five different places and I see clients there.
Cool. Well, let's get into it then. I guess just from the start, why did you decide to study physical therapy and what got you into climbing after that? I think you started climbing afterwards.
Yeah. So I first started I guess like rock climbing in my second year of PT school, and pretty much like I took a very biomechanical approach to climbing. It was very like kind of science nerdy in how I wanted to like climb and just like see the improvements of things. I just climbed throughout most of my PT school. It was like a nice way to like relax and get some physical fitness in. Did not expect it to become a career whatsoever. And it kind of sort of planned out that way, which was really fun.
Well, so I guess, like, did you do other sports beforehand? Is that, like, what got you into studying PT in the first place?
Yeah. I did high school, like, soccer. And I did a bit of, like, intramural in college. I did some dance, like, competitive dance, which was really interesting.
Yeah. Wait, what kind of dance?
like some, like, hip-hop contemporary type style.
Oh, cool.
Like, more like the urban, yeah. It was pretty fun. So I always did, like, some type of, like, activity like that. To kind of like keep busy. I was never super into like traditional weightlifting, you know, like I gave it a shot so many times in high school, college, and grad school, and like it always felt like a chore. So finding like an activity was always a much better use of, I guess, my time, if you will.
Yeah. So then I don't really know like what they teach in school for physical therapy. Does it go much into like these finger injuries that you would see in climbing, or is that something that you somehow have to figure out on your own or like apply broader concepts to?
I would say we definitely touch on the hand and like the fingers and stuff like that as like part of overall anatomy and like physiology and stuff like that, but it is very much I don't want to say afterthought, but it's not nearly as detailed as you would in something like OT. And this is actually something I would say 90% of the time, if you're dealing with a hand injury, you should go to an OT, not a PT. They're the ones that know more about it. Yeah. The thing is, obviously, I specialize in hands and fingers because that's what I see the most of. So like I've taken continuing education classes and stuff like that. But in the actual grad school, we touch on more the entire body, right? And like more neuro, more like cardiac stuff. Like there's so many topics to cover. Hands are a very small part. Whereas I think OTs spend like an entire, at least a whole class about it, because it's all about like fine motor skills and stuff like that. Usually like stroke patients and stuff like that. So we do, to make a long story short, yes, we learn about it, but it is a small part of one course that we take.
Okay. I had actually not heard of that before. What is an OT, by the way?
Occupational therapist. There's a lot of similarities. I feel like a lot of people don't know too much about OTs, but pretty much, they do a lot of the similar things. You'll find them both working in like hospitals and similar settings, but they typically take care of more of the hands-on stuff, like the hands, maybe some wrist stuff, and then in general, it's more like occupational based, so like kind of getting you back to doing your normal activities of daily living and more just daily tasks, right? As opposed to like PTs tend to be more return to sport. If you're in that setting, orthopedic setting.
Oh, I see. So then would you still recommend that for like climbers?
So if you have like some type of like real pulley tear, yeah, for sure. Because typically that's going to be affecting more and more things. But the caveat here is like usually you graduate either PT or OT, whatever you do, when it's like, especially with a more traditional insurance-based model, you kind of graduate when you're cleared to do most of your things independently. And that certainly does not include putting your entire body weight on your fingertips.
Right? Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So typically, right, especially when you're trying to make your case to insurance companies, it's like, all right, what can't they do? And you gotta kind of like BS it a little bit and being like, oh, you know, yeah, they have some pain in their fingers and it is kind of stopping them from doing their normal work activities. If you're typing all the time, all the software engineers that come see me, you know, it's like, we got to be like, all right, yeah, let's make sure that we're trying to justify by something else that it's stopping you from. Obviously I'm not doing really that anymore as I'm at climbing gyms. I don't really have to justify anything. But once when I was at the more like normal PT clinic, and saw climbers there, it was definitely a wrestling match to get things approved.
Oh my gosh. The nightmare of American healthcare system, I guess.
It's not great. It's
if
not
we great. Have international viewers watching, they'll probably be a little bit shocked to hear that, I think.
You have to run through a lot of hoops.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We can. That's an entire episode on its own, honestly. Like deductibles, copays, yeah. That's
oh my gosh. Yeah. We don't have to get into that today, thankfully. Okay. So then what kind of work have you done specifically with comp climbers?
Taking a step back, how I got into it in the first place, right? I was actually approached by my home gym, Method Climbing, in New Jersey, and they are actually a very well-known kind of competition team. They won nationals in 2023, I believe.
Nice.
So yeah, very very good team. And they actually, like, the owners approached me saying, "Hey, do you want to, you know, like, kind of start treating some of the people here and just kind of like, you know, continue seeing your own people." And that kind of started developing as like my part-time gig in addition to my normal full-time PT clinic job. And I started seeing a lot more of your recreational climbers. And as I started getting more of a relationship with the coaches there, a lot of the competition athletes started seeing me there. Most of the time it was like in tandem with the coaching. So like, I'll do like a one-off session and be like, "Hey, these are my findings. This is what I think they should avoid." And the coaches really appreciated that. Right. So it was less of getting a client and then seeing them for weekly visits for X amount of times. And it was more so like identifying what the issue is and then giving some of that feedback to the coaches. Back then it was very much like, very limited spots. That sucked. It was like 7 to 10 PM. On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, because it was after my normal days. I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
But that's how that started. And then it kind of started getting more and more popular, where now I'm at 5 different gyms. So it's really fun. I've built a good amount of community now with a lot of the coaches in the New Jersey, New York City area. And my name just started kind of getting out there more and more with a lot of the coaches and a lot of youth athletes kind of getting referred to me. And that's kind of my model, especially when working with youth athletes. I'll try to make it as independent as possible. So like, I'll see them for a couple visits and all those findings I'll try to send to the coaches if they allow that. And then I'll kind of give my general suggestions of what they should avoid, right? It's less of a come to this clinic for twice a week for X amount of weeks, and we're always kind of working on things while not climbing. Unless there's like some of the growth plate fractures, which is, I'm sure we'll get into in a bit.
Yeah. And so you work a lot with like the Method Youth team?
Yeah, so that's the one I primarily worked with, because they actually I went with them to Youth Nationals this past year in in June. So that was a really cool experience, June 29th to like July 3rd or something like that.
Yeah, it's long.
Yeah, oh man. I have a blog post about it, and it was kind of like talking about my whole experience there. And I mean, it's 6 days. And if you're like a very good team that has consistently people in every category making finals, you're there doing 12, 13 hour shifts, six days in a row.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and as a PT, do you get to like go into ISO?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's like the youth ISO scene like? Is it like, is it stressful? Is it, is there a lot of, you can like feel the energy in the room?
You could, it's especially in the, like the semifinals and finals, everyone is just like super nerve wracking.
Yeah.
It's pretty stressful. But how I got into it too is, the coaches got me the L2 certification. So you need that to get into isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like by USAC standards, I'm a L2 coach. But my job primarily there was to be the in-house PT, if you will.
In ISO, what kind of work do you do there for the athletes?
Yeah, so primarily it was to see, we had a list every day. We would come up with a list of like everyone who we think needs a little bit more of a touch-up if they had any type of tweak. And the coaches knew this already coming into nationals, who is a little banged up or whatever, right? So we had a list, and whatever the things pile up as the days kind of continue. So we had a list every time of these people that I want to see. We give them like a 20-minute block as part of their warm-up. And as they're still warming up, I'll kind of see them for like these 20-minute blocks and do any of my treatments with them, tape them up. I did a lot of, some sports taping for just like extra support, and just kind of like break up some tissue, and then kind of giving some like in general on-the-wall warm-ups that they should be doing to prepare. Because at the end of the day, especially for semis and finals, we don't know what the actual round looks like. So we have to just kind of prepare for everything. And so if we know that there's like an ankle injury and we don't really want to be putting all the weight when it's like bent like this, right? It's like, all right, we need to be preparing for that as a part of a warm-up if that actually happens during the comp. So that's kind of my job, identifying the weak points of whatever body part that we're working on, trying to train those as part of a warm-up so then they're in best shape for their actual comp. It seems like, I think a lot of sports have something like this, but climbing is like everyone there was like, well, this is so cool. The method just rolled up with like their personal PT. And they were the coaches that were gracious enough for me to, whenever there was downtime, I would check up on anyone else from any other team. So that was really cool. I made some cool connections with the coaches there, but that was like my primary kind of like be the person that prepares people when they are any tweaks. I definitely saw my fair share of like emergency treatments, which was kind of crazy. Yeah, like some people like got injured like, during the comp and like wanted, and it's between rounds, right? So like, if I had a qualifier and they come out of that banged up, like an actual like, oh, I think I like actually really injured something, and the semifinals is the next day, that kind of identifying how bad the injury is to make that call if they need to actually like, not compete in the next round, unfortunately. Hopefully that didn't happen. Everything that was kind of like banged up, we were able to at least mitigate the risk so that they can ultimately try just, but I'd still say like avoid XYZ if something did happen.
Makes sense. And yeah, just like with the warmups in ISO, I was just going to say, I really wish that I had like a PT who could always be there and like give me specific moves or like exercises to do on the wall while warming up so that I can have like a good comp. I feel like that would make a huge difference. Warming up is like so hard when you have an injury in the back of your head. But yeah, so I think at the World Cups, I see like a lot of coaches and PTs kind of like ready at the sidelines with like ice packs, taping, all that kind of stuff. Is that kind of like what you're doing there too?
Yeah, we're in ISO, so something like cold packs wouldn't really work well, but there's definitely like kits, right? Coaches will certainly bring like kits of like taping for bracing purposes or whatever, and then they'll have like a lot of like workout equipment, like portable boards, and so like some like rubber bands, right, to like warm up the whole body and stuff like that. So it's more like a workout kit. Method kind of brings an entire like a huge suitcase full of stuff. Yeah, they kind of pull up and just like take over an entire corner. It's pretty funny.
Oh wow, it's intense. I've also seen people like get massages or like use massage guns mid comp. Like, is that actually helpful?
So it's like the same idea as like depumping. Have you heard of that?
No.
So that's another thing that I did a lot when there isn't an injury per se, but like especially when it was that boulder round, I did this a couple times where it's like...
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
You do three boulders and then take a break. In that break, to just get all the blood like rushing out of there and like heal or get back to normal state quicker. Also, like adrenaline is always going to have a increased blood flow in that area to get more tightened up. I basically just depumped them by doing like some soft tissue work of the forearm, and it's not like treatment in from an injury standpoint, is just kind of get some more blood flow in a more efficient way. But if you don't have someone actually doing that for you, something like a massage gun works quite well.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I would say it's not, you know, it's not going to treat anything. It's more so like it feels nice. It kind of mobilizes things, gets blood flow. That's really what you want.
I think, well, speaking of depumping, I don't know if this is really depumping, but like my biggest bro science thing is that if I'm feeling pump, I like to like raise my arms above my head, and then I like imagine all the blood flowing out that's like tired.
Yeah.
And then I like put my arms down to get like new blood in.
Yeah.
And no, that's like, does that actually work? Is that a real thing?
That is like, without getting super scientific, that's exactly what's happening.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you're literally getting like all the little kind of fatigued buildup in that area, and we're making it more go back down. So getting out of the extremities. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will continue doing that then. Thank you for thanks for that.
Yeah, it's like everything, like you like flex a muscle, you're getting blood flow in there, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you're consistently flexing that all that blood starts kind of piling up here, it gets stiffer, it gets less likely for it to be able to contract in the same way when it's already full, if that makes sense. So we want to kind of let new blood kind of get in there, chill out a little bit, more oxygen.
Yes, that's what it is, more oxygen. So in terms of treating like youth climbers versus adults, what are some of the differences you see there?
Yeah, so this is, I think, the biggest thing that I talked about in the blog post and when I was mentioning to other coaches. In my normal day-to-day, I guess it's not 9 to 5, right? It's more like 3 to 9. But
yeah.
In my normal work day, I would see like your young adults is probably the most common age range that I see. And it's usually going to be fingers, wrists, and probably shoulders, I'd say, are like the three most common things I see. There's like, when you think of climbing, those are typically what you pull the most with. For youth athletes, they usually start climbing like before puberty. And so their fingers grow with them. And typically their finger strength is not really an issue. And while it's still beneficial maybe to like start training, you know, to get to that really elite level, I would say what I got from this was almost every injury I saw was more traditionally like total body work, meaning like I saw a lot of like ankle stuff, a lot of back stuff, neck injuries, definitely some shoulders. But ultimately, it was those like big kind of coordination moves where like you have to like press with everything and like flex every muscle. And I saw a lot of more like straining those, like pulling muscles, as opposed to tweaking fingers or wrists that are like more joint based, that in adults, you don't really train because you typically grew up doing like more muscle-based sports, if that makes sense.
Like muscle-based sports as opposed to like joint-based?
Yeah, it's not like you're not using muscles in climbing, right? It's more so like, you know, soccer, like, you know, your traditional sports that you do, like track, whatever, right? Like, or weightlifting especially, right? Like, I feel like climbers tend to be against weightlifting a lot of times.
Okay,
right? I think all of those do a good job of building, like, muscle strength. And in general, with kids, they grow up already with, like, their tendons and their joints being pretty strong because they grow with it, right? They're doing the sport that is very body weight, so they're not shock loading their system by doing too much too soon. It's just very body weight based. And then as they start growing, they start kind of increasing their strength, filling out a little bit more. And so the higher risk tends to be in those like more total body, like very hard on the muscles as opposed to hard on like your fingers or tendons. Typically, it takes a lot longer to build tendon strength, and adults don't really train fingers ever before climbing, right? So that's, I don't see finger pain nearly as much in the youth athlete population.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, so you mentioned that they kind of grow with their fingers. I've heard a little bit about like growth plate injuries, but I don't know much about it. I heard that's like finger related. So is that something you can get into a bit?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess to give a brief background, like science background on it, growth plates are in every joint in the body. So it's not it's not exclusive to fingers. Like your knees, everywhere that you literally grow, there's the plates there that are essentially almost like an open-ended, not closed-off ending of that bone. So the bone grows from that position, right? And so those are like how you get bigger, right? Every bone in your body gets a little bit bigger to an extent as you go through puberty. So with fingers, you have them in these positions as well, right? And a lot of times it gets misdiagnosed as pulley injuries because that's the way more popular diagnosis in adults. However, like I mentioned, tendons typically tend to be really strong on youth athletes because they grew with it, right? So when you're growing and these joints are getting larger, the weak point of that whole part of the muscle or joint area is that growth plate itself. Because it's literally, like I said, it's like an open cap, right? And so if the bone is growing through here, to allow it to grow, that part is more malleable. It's less stiff. And so when you load it a lot or like do a lot of like, yeah, just shock loading, high intensity training in those fingers, in those growth plates, the chance of injury there is just a lot higher, as opposed to like your flexor tendons or your pulleys, which are more your traditional muscle tendon based stuff. So yeah, just kind of doing a little bit more damage on the growth plate and the joint area. You can get it in the knees as well, right? A lot of runners, like youth athletes that are runners will get growth plate injuries for the knees. Same idea, right? Like you're shock loading that part by running, that always putting like a lot of like bouncing stress into it. So same thing with kids.
How old until that's like not really a concern anymore? Is it like when you're done with puberty?
Until you're done growing, yeah. I mean, it females, I think usually it's anywhere from 10, 11 to maybe like 15 or so. Then boys are usually a little bit later, like 13 to 17 maybe.
How often does this like finger growth plate injury come up in comp athletes?
It is the most common finger injury in comp athletes. So while I don't think it's the most common injury period for them, it is when it's a finger injury, it's the first thing you want to rule out. And it is one of the only injuries that I would say needs a proper break from any loading there. Like whereas a lot of like pulley stuff, flexor tendon, or just a lot of other injuries for the body, I typically wouldn't suggest a complete break. This is one where you probably need to take a break. And so coaches, it's always like on coach's mind of like, oh, okay, how is this a growth plate fracture, right? And like the best way to see that is with an x-ray.
Okay. And like how long of a break does it take?
If the damage is like pretty small, it could be anywhere from, you know, a couple weeks to, if it's pretty bad, it could be in like, I'd say 2 to 6 weeks on the high end.
Okay.
And like you can still, you know, train grip strength, but just like really not load, hyperload of that joint over there in the fingers. I think this was my second time seeing a growth plate fracture injury. And it was, just like a youth athlete from a neighboring gym. And we were working on a lot of finger stuff. His finger strength itself was extremely high. So it wasn't really matching with any of the other like normal protocols that I would do. And he would really only feel that discomfort when, like at the end of sessions. So like things to pick up on are like, all right, like you can do a lot of these things, but when crimping and doing a lot of it afterwards, it feels very icky, like feeling like joint pain. You don't have arthritis when you're a kid, mm-hmm. right? So typically any joint stuff is an immediate red flag of like, oh, okay, something might be off there, right? And so the parents were just like very, adamant that it was a pulley injury, and I had to like pull a few teeth to get an x-ray, and it was confirmed to be a growth plate fracture.
Okay. So he did have to like take some time off there.
He did have to take some time off, unfortunately, but it was, I think he was off maybe like 3 weeks or so. And then when he got back into the normal training, like he was totally fine. And the thing is, like, we had, like, off sessions, like, every other week or so for, like, 6 weeks. And it was, like, the same of, like, oh, I feel really good. But then I climb again and it feels off. So it's just, like, the quicker you try to diagnose these things, the more you save time, right? Like, those 6 weeks didn't need to be completely, you know, used up like that. We could have taken a proper break and then built back up. Because it's a fracture, right? Like, it sounds scary, but it's a literal fracture.
Yeah, thinking about, like, taking a break from climbing, there are a lot of people in my life who may or may not listen to this episode who think that I should be, like, climbing more through my injuries. And my thought process is I'm not really in a huge rush, or even if I do have a comp coming up, I'd, like, rather have it be, like, a bit more healed than try to do, like, shitty, like, half-effective training where I, like, can't give it my all because, like, maybe I'll re-injure it or, like, make my injury worse. I guess, like, what's the move? Like, what's the right move here?
I think that's totally fine. No, I'm not going to be like, no, you have to keep climbing. No. I think if you feel that it's no longer really that fun to be climbing when you're constantly in a little bit of that discomfort, like, yeah, why would you continue? Like, just let things heal properly. I think my opinion is more so just, especially for injuries to the finger where there's very little blood flow. The science with that is just like pulleys just don't have as much blood flow as like muscles, right? Like tendons and ligaments just have less blood flow compared to muscles. They just won't heal completely with just rest, right? So you always have, like, you can take a rest in the beginning because it's uncomfortable. And then as you get back into it, just make sure that you're not getting back to what your normal was. You have to, like, load things back up slowly. As opposed to something like a muscle tear, you can literally, like, tear a muscle and it's going to hurt, it's going to suck, but, like, after, I don't know, 4 weeks or so, you'll be back to 100%. It won't work that way with, like, ligaments. Timeline wise, it takes longer to heal, but also, like, you could rest it pretty, you can just take a proper break and then work your way back and you should be totally fine with muscle injuries. Yeah, like ligament injuries, you have to be a lot more delicate with how you approach it. That's all. It's pretty rare to tear muscles when climbing, first of all. But if you do, right, and you, like, really, like, feel that kind of, like almost like Velcro strap feeling in that muscle, and there's, like, a lot of pain, a lot of swelling, whatever. If you take it pretty easy and don't really climb on it for a few weeks, and now it starts getting less painful and you can do most things at this point, you're not really restricted in your range of motion. The chance of it getting back to 100% is quite high, as opposed to a pulley tear, where if you just take a complete break and let it heal like that, it'll have a lot more scar tissue buildup because it doesn't have a lot of blood flow. So rest away, but just understand that for some injuries that are more ligament based, you should be doing some type of loading after an initial break.
In general, like, what's the recommendation for, like, when you can start, like, when you can climb on something?
I guess, like, to be clear, anytime I work with someone, one of my like interview questions or like consultation questions is like, what is your goal out of this? In terms of, like, I'll have competitive athletes that say, I have a competition in 2 weeks. I need to just get to the finish line, you know? And my approach there is going to be very different than, like, okay, I have this thing in 3 months that I want to be in good shape for, versus, like, oh, I just climb for hobby, for fun. And that, it's going to totally vary based on what your goals are. As general timeline rules, I would say, I guess we can go by types of injuries. So I would classify, like, if it's more muscular based, anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks is pretty normal for you to be back to 100%. Anywhere like tendons, depending on the severity of it, can take, say, on to 6 to 8 weeks, 10 weeks plus if it's an actual tear. And then ligaments can be 3 months plus if it's a full tear of ligaments.
But, like, is that with, like, still being able to climb on it a little bit?
If it's a full rupture, you definitely need to be taking some initial break and then doing some very light loading, and then climbing, I would say, starts in, like, the second month or so.
What happens if it is, like, a comp climber who has a comp in 2 weeks?
This kind of goes in a tandem, but this is a fun story. Uh-huh. I was at a competition, Ed Method, actually, and they do, like, a citizens competition. And there was a pro climber that came by and got injured during finals, during, like, the second to last boulder. And he needed to just get a zone on the last one to podium. And I was like the PT on staff, if you will. Not really. Like I was just in the crowd, but they always call me when anything happens.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So I was just, they made an announcement and it was like, please come into the isolation area, Miguel. I was like, okay. So I went in there and I checked up on him and it was his knee. Right. And so he fell, twisted on his knee. And I was like, all right, dude, it's like a tear of like the MCL. Like it's a proper tear. Like I can move it more than I should be.
Whoa.
Right. So I was like, okay, my honest opinion is you do not climb this fourth boulder. The risk of you, if you fall into it right now, you could, it's like a partial tear, let's say, and impossible to tear the extent, to tell the extent by without imaging exactly. But I'm like, I'm very confident that it's at least a partial tear. It's not a full.
When it comes to home insurance, Geico works for you. And since I'm the Geico Gecko, I'm here working for you too.
Hey Gecko, can you record my voicemail greeting?
No problemo.
You've reached the amazing Rita. She's probably busy right now teaching music theory to neighborhood birds or telling a total stranger how they can bundle home and car insurance with Geico to get the discounts they deserve. But rest assured, she'll get back to you once she's done brightening her little corner of the world.
Did that sound all right?
Nailed it. No notes.
Let Geico work for you. Get more with Geico.
Well, because it's not completely loosed, but if you fall in it again, chance is quite high for you to finish ripping that off. So I'd say let's not do that. Like you can't really walk on it, right? And he's like, okay, but what if I land on just the good leg on that last one? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. I looked at the boulder and like the first move is very static to the zone, and then after the zone you have to jump. But I won't do that. I just need a zone to get podium.
Okay.
And I was like blown away at the level of like. It's very smart, right? It's like he like understood his limitation and what he needs to do to get to that. And as long as I was like, I said, as long as you are very confident in your self-control to not go for any jumpy move. And when you do get to zone, you're going to let go and land on the other side and tuck. I was like, there's a lot of ifs here, but if you really want to do that, that's how I would approach this. So I tipped him up and I was like, that would be my opinion. Like, I would probably not climb, but if you do want to do that, do all of these things. And he was like, got it. He did it. He got the zone and he hopped down exactly as I said. And I was like, wow, I respect it.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
If your mentality is like, I need to get to this, like it's, if I've worked on it so long, because it's, I mean, if some of these kids, especially like they worked all year for this, right? Like to say you can't go to nationals is very heartbreaking. So as long as you kind of say all the things that clears like my responsibility from like, this is what I think. But if you want to compete, definitely don't do X, Y, Z. So I gave those instructions to him and he followed that. And he was a little older. He was like, I think 17 or 18. So I think you're able to better make those calls if you have more experience in the game. And he did that. So he understand. He was like jumping on one leg to get to the boulder and
jumping on one leg
to get back. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that he was able to pull out that podium.
It was so wild to see, because with the MCL tear, like you can toe down pretty good. You just can't do any type of like drop knees. You can't do any real like heel hooks or like put all your weight through it, but you can like use it. You can like use your glute and like push through it, right? So I was like, okay, you can do all these things that are required in that boulder, technically speaking, up to the zone.
And he could have walked to the boulder then if he wanted to.
He wasn't able to put that much weight on it.
Oh, well, okay. Like
full weight on it.
Mm.
Yeah, he wasn't able to stand on that one leg. So it was a bad injury.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for sharing that one. So yeah, going back to the youth injuries, you mentioned that a lot of the more common injuries you see now are like full body or like shoulder, back, neck kind of stuff. How do they go about preventing these injuries? Like, is there a strength training that's helpful for preventing these?
Yeah, so that's a big thing I'm trying to push more for. I think general strength training, the competitive team, like Method, I think is like very good at doing strength training as part of their curriculum, if you will. They have like full on workouts, right? And they do like just general conditioning. I believe a lot more teams are incorporating something like this, especially at the national level. I was talking to some coaches and just like in the West Coast, like all over the country, they're doing more of a push for general strength training. And just like from me kind of sharing some of my thoughts, seeing the amount of people that I saw with ankle injuries, with back injuries, at nationals, like happening during the comp, they were all like, yeah, we're going to start implementing like ankle training. So that was kind of cool. Like, I think they saw that and in real time made the decision for next year to start doing more ankle training. And it doesn't have to be too complex, right? It can be like 5 minutes of your warm up to just like work on some like ankle stability, static and dynamic. But, you know, we're at a point in competition climbing where we are really testing the limits of like what's possible. So we are always like trying to, it's very like innovative with the how three-dimensional it is, right? And so it's rarely just like you place a foot and you engage the foot and you pull in. There's a lot of like slab running across, like a volume, stuff like that. And so you can easily twist ankles if you're not training that.
What does ankle training look like?
It could look like anywhere from if you're trying to build static strength and just like be able to hold a position like all your weight on like a small jib versus like on a volume, just like standing on one leg and adding different types of load. So like I personally like a lot of the around the worlds, you take a kettlebell, you stand on one leg, you take a kettlebell with the hands and just pass it around your body, like in and around, behind the back and like this. So you're doing that with just standing on one leg. It makes the weight go a lot more in one direction, meaning the ankle has to like work those stabilizers. And then as it goes behind, you're never kind of staying in one position, right? So I like that a lot for static strength. And then dynamic, this is where I think would be really useful for like the more coordination style, is going to be a lot of like single leg jumps, box jumps, multiple jumps of like doing like jumping in one direction and then immediately as soon as you land, jumping to a different direction, just like more proprioceptive stuff, meaning your body's ability to know where it's at any time. So that's like basically never giving it time to like think or like visually see. It's like just like more react.
Okay, how about this? I'll go over some like dangerous moves that people think are like pretty scary in comps and get your thoughts on those moves.
Sure, yeah, I'll rank them.
If you're interested in ad-free episodes and would like to unlock over 4 hours of deleted scenes, including one where Miguel talks about treating injuries that happened at Youth Nationals, do consider helping support this podcast on Patreon. Some other perks include a membership pin shipped to you after 2 months, prioritized guest questions, or the ability to submit video questions, and more to come. The proceeds go back into the podcast, help me break even, and they help me improve the experience of the guests. If you'd like to help out non-monetarily, liking, commenting, and sharing helps a great deal as well. Back to the show. Okay, first one, downward dinos. I was just thinking like the hard mat situation in Bern, if you watched that World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like the spin and
They tried to peel it, right?
Yeah, and then like the crazy falls onto the apparently very hard mat. Mm-hmm. Third one, I don't know if this has actually been said in a World Cup, but I've just like seen it online. Like the Dualtex foot slide onto a chip. So you like jump onto Dualtex and then like the point is that you're supposed to like slide off the Dualtex onto a chip.
I've definitely seen that on like a viral Instagram reel. Have they had that in like a World Cup?
I don't know if they've like specifically said that. I remember in Salt Lake, they had something like kind of similar to that, I think.
Okay.
And like maybe that was like where, I don't know if Natalia hurt her knee on that one or if that was like a different boulder. And then she like her knee was, I think her knee was already kind of hurt, but then she still did that move. But yeah.
This might be a bit of a hot take on that. But I would say that the last one is probably the least dangerous in terms of it's the most controllable in that you're trying to go for it. Yeah, it's I think it's the scariest probably. You're going into like a fast kind of like stick a move that is a lot of like single leg strength and stability training that you can do and prepare for that isn't that specific to that one move. Like by training single leg ankle stability, dynamic, like shock loading, like jumping in different directions, right? All that stuff. I think you're at a much better chance at hitting a move like that. I think when it starts becoming dangerous and not advisable is when you can't control factors. Like, yeah, it's like outside factors are outside of control, right? So I would say it was the mat thing. What was the other one?
Downward dinos.
Downward dinos are, I believe they're banned in IFSC, right?
So they just added it back in this year.
Whoa, okay.
Although the downward dinos have been more like, I don't know if it was just because they wanted to like add in the Lachey moves. So it's like not like you're jumping straight from something that's like higher to lower, like with your arms. It's
more so like the curve.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seems like it. They haven't like said anything crazier than that, I think. It just like goes a little bit down with like the Lachey usually.
Okay, I'd probably go for this one next, the downward dido. I think you can train your tendons to be a little bit better at like dealing with the shock loading. However, physiologically speaking, you are absolutely more at risk at the fast eccentric component. Do you know what concentric versus eccentric is?
No, let's get into that.
Concentric is like, let's say my bicep here, doing this, I'm using my bicep to bring it closer to me. That's concentric. Lengthening is eccentric. So muscle gets longer, but it's still being used, right? So when you're doing like a jump and grabbing onto something, you're not just going to have a full dead stop here. You're going to like slow the momentum this way. There's just too much weight at you, right? Because you're falling on it with momentum. So gravity is also pulling you down. So you hit it. And the fact that you're activating all your lats and biceps and fingers and everything is kind of pulling in at the same time that you're lengthening it, that is just more injurious by itself, always. So I would say it is 100% more dangerous to do a move like that, like on a camper's board. Mm-hmm. I think I would never suggest as part of a training thing to go like all the way up and then jump and down and catch yourself here, like with on like a 20 mil ledge or something like that. I think the risk is just much higher than the reward.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you're really shock loading your fingers while they're trying to get lengthened. So, I mean, I think if you have like a specific project and you want like bulletproof fingers, sure, we can work it like very lowly over time. But to 99% of the population, that is, it's not, the risk is always the reward on that. You always have to like think about like athlete risk versus reward. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised that they put that back in, but I think it's probably the caveat of like, if you're doing momentum with like Lachey's and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think so. And so then the worst one is the burn hard mat situation.
Yeah, and not even the move itself, but I wasn't aware that the mats were significantly harder. I believe, yeah, like some people were saying that like they tried out, like it's a different type of mat or something, but it looked like there was a bounce to it. So I would say we may have to like reconsider how good those types of mats are.
Well, I've heard some like conflicting info about like how hard mats should be. I've heard that like hard mats can be better because then you're not going to like risk, I guess, like hurting your ankle or like twisting your ankle when you land. Where like if the mat is too soft, like maybe you'll like land on your feet weird.
I think if it's like a mattress soft for sure, like there's a lot more like give. Uh-huh. But I don't think in most commercial gyms it's like soft to that point.
Okay.
Also like the type of fall that you're gonna have from setting a move that is like so wildly like dynamic, you're not gonna be falling on your 2 feet. You're going to be on your back at some point, right? And so that kind of impact. I don't know. That's tough, right? Because at the same point, like, no, that's bad to say. I was going to say, like, the worst thing that can happen is, like, you'll lose, like, your air a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, you can definitely, like, pull things by having, like, a hard fall like that. So, yeah, I think, like, that stays as number one.
The one place that has super, super soft mat is, like, Bouldering Project. I know in Seattle, at least, I don't know about like all the bouldering projects, but usually their mats are like super, super soft.
I'm not aware of that. So if it's too soft for sure, it can make it more likely for you to roll ankles. We gotta find the Goldilocks.
Yeah. Basically it sounds like there's a lot of specifics to what makes something like slightly more or less injury prone.
Right.
Do you want to get into any other hot takes that you have?
Let's see. So I think tape, I use tape a lot. I like tape a lot as a source, okay, as a resource. My hot take is that I think climbing as a whole really overestimates the value of tape and doesn't understand its uses or limitations as much as I'd like it to be. And I say that not as like to blame any coach that uses it. I think it absolutely works to support some things, right? But when it starts becoming like, this hurts, I'm going to tape it and still climb on it, you're very much masking a bigger problem. So I would classify use of tape as like really three different ways. One is going to be the best case scenario is you use it to know that you have an injury and you've been actively working towards that injury, and it's used as a supportive structure so that you can still climb while rehabbing that injury. And any good kind of like PT or coach should be able to understand that that's what it's for, right? And I think most coaches do. I think it's more so let's try to educate a lot of athletes who see a lot of people in the World Cup circuit and everywhere just kind of use tape and think of that that's what you should do when you're injured, right? So that's like scenario number one, right? I think what ends up happening a lot is I have an injury, I just pulled a muscle, or I pulled like the most common one is like you'll see a lot of taping on the finger, right? For like just random tweaks. When you use it to like, this hurts when I do it, let me put a tape on and it feels a bit better, and you just continue that, it protects the pulley a little bit so that it's and for any body part, right? But let's use the fingers as an example. It's protecting it a little bit, giving it some more support by like 10% or so. But if you now have a feedback mechanism of like, oh, cool, I can do this with less pain now, you're going to try a little bit harder, and the tape is not going to completely withstand the load anyway, right? It just gives the a little bit more support. But if you like hit that threshold, let's say you can pull 50, like normally you can pull 100 pounds on this, but because you're a little tweaked, now you can only pull 80 pounds on it. With tape, let's say you can pull 90 pounds on it. We're making numbers up, right? But let's say that's the case, right? And cool, now what used to kind of hurt me doesn't really hurt me until I get to like my max level. But let's say I'm doing that and a foot slips, and now all of a sudden all that weight went into there. We easily surpassed that 100 pounds, and the chance of...
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Re-injury is much higher. And we wouldn't have that if we had a little bit more of a kind of real feedback from the hold, from what we're feeling. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
So I think a lot of people use it in that way of like, I have something going on. Let me just put this on. It'll make you feel a bit better, and then do whatever they're doing at normal level, which without trying to acknowledge that they do have something that they should actively work towards. And then the worst case scenario is when you use it when there's nothing wrong as a preventative means.
Okay.
I think that creates I think it just creates a really bad dependency on something that is not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess a lot of people would continue like taping. I guess I've done it just because like I have been doing it, and then I don't know when I can stop doing it. Like I don't know when it's healed.
And that's like the main question, right? That's why if you work with a professional and you kind of have like guidance throughout this whole time, that question is easy to answer because they'll know where you're currently at and what your goal is and how you've been progressing, right? If you're doing self-rehab and it feels a lot better, but you've been using tape this whole time, it kind of gives you a false sense of security of like how good is the structure actually, right? And then if you just can kind of continue using that support for X amount of time after the injury is fully healed, you feel that you can never quite push to the limit without this. And it's just, again, giving you a little bit more of a snug fit, it's not really taking any load away from it though. So that's all. I think I would always encourage, if there is no pain when you're climbing with tape, with whatever thing, right? And you've been doing that for 2 weeks is like my magic number. I like 2 weeks for seeing changes, right? If you're doing that for 2 weeks and you haven't been feeling pain for 2 weeks, try climbing without tape. And if the pain starts coming back, then it never healed properly. And we should take that seriously. If your cycle is like, okay, I did this for 2 weeks and then I climb and without tape and it kind of started hurting again, and your response to that is, let me just put some tape on it again, that's what I mean of like you're consistently masking the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bad part, I think, about taping that I think a lot of people tend to fall into.
That makes sense. Okay, I think one of the other hot takes you had mentioned, you said most injuries don't require time off the wall, and knowing how to prevent it from worsening will save you a lot of frustration. So how do you prevent it from worsening?
Yeah, that's the difficult part, right? This is how do you... So I think the only things I would say need a complete time off the wall is like full tears or ruptures. Whenever you see like deep bruising or changes in color in whatever structure you're looking at, or if there's any numbness, Usually that's a sign of like some type of nerve irritation, but basically any type of pain that isn't mechanically driven. And what I mean by that is if you can recreate the pain by doing something that's mechanically driven, if you're just having like pain without doing anything, it's just kind of like a burning sensation. That's when I'm like, okay, that's a red flag. We need to take some time off / get it checked out. Right. But if it's like the easy example, again, let's say that you pop a pulley, right? It shouldn't just be in constant pain. If it is, you probably did some more damage to like all the surrounding structures. You should really only have the pain when you're actively engaging that Fletcher tendon, because that puts pressure onto that pulley. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
And so whenever you deal with more systemic issues, which is your non-mechanical based injuries, so like numbness, like some, if you have like a lot of like deep bruising, like discoloration, all of that is like more blood vessel injury, stuff like that. Like that's when I, you know, get it checked out. When it's purely mechanical, you typically want to be doing some type of loading for things to heal properly. Otherwise, there will be a buildup of scar tissue. So the body's really good at healing itself, but it heals itself in like a very short-term aspect. If your goal is to continue climbing at a high level, you oftentimes don't want to take a complete break and then just kind of hop back into it, because it more often than not didn't heal quite correctly. And fractures, I would definitely take a break with fractures.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, good to know the differences between what you should and shouldn't take a break for. I guess if you aren't taking a break, how do you know what's too much?
I would say pain, like pain theory, that I tell to all my clients is, if you feel that there is pain when doing a move, that is, I would classify it as sharp. So sharp meaning like it kind of like shoots up or down wherever you're feeling it, or like an immediate 0 to 100 pain. That's red flag. Don't do that move again. We're not ready for that yet. The body's just telling you, okay, cool, let's do something easier or something not as aggressive. If the pain is more dull, which is like kind of like creeping up on you, and it gets worse with more reps or longer time that you're holding that hold, stay up to about like a 3 out of 10 is usually my benchmark. If you get more than like a 3 out of 10 dull achiness, that's another time to take a step away, take a break, try it again. And if that continues, we know that that's too much, right? If it stays up to a 3 or less and it kind of feels that dull achiness, but it doesn't get any worse with prolonged time, in fact, it actually gets a bit better, that's the sweet spot. You want to feel a little bit of discomfort, right? You want to feel like you're trying a little bit, that the tissues are clearly telling you, like, no, I'm not at 100%, but I need some of this load to get better. That we want to stay in that like 1 to 3 out of 10 discomfort when we're doing things. Up to a 4 maybe, right? But yeah, anything that is like sharp goes to 100 really quickly, gets worse with more repetitions, where we want to stay away from those. And then afterwards, if you end a session and let's say you never got to sharp pain and never got to over a 3 out of 10, and you end the session and it feels sore, and that soreness goes away within a couple hours, you did just enough. If that lingers until the next day, you did too much.
I see.
And there's different injuries that will more often than not present as longer last, as in like more acute in the way that you'll feel an immediate pain when doing something like a pulley tear. You don't need to, it'll be pretty obvious. Like you do a move and that'll hurt, right? Whereas something like a tendonitis issue, or a Fletcher tendon synovitis, issues that are more like inflammation of an entire group, that won't really be as in your face during a specific move. It'll be more afterwards. And it's the accumulation of lower loads over time that will kind of get that achiness that you're feeling. Those tends to be the more frustrating ones. It's less obvious to catch on your own, right? And so working with a professional there is obviously a value. But my advice stands true of like, if you feel a little bit of achiness afterwards and it goes away in a couple hours, we did good. Call that a good session. Let's stay in that pocket. But if you never get to that pain level, you don't know what you can do, and it'll just start kind of healing slightly correctly. That's all.
Thanks for going into that. Okay. One thing that I thought about with like youth athletes, I feel like I've talked to a few youth athletes. Sometimes I ask about like what injuries they've had. And a lot of times I just hear like, oh, I've like never had an injury. Is that like the most important thing, like not getting injured? Because so many people I've talked to, it's just like, oh, I've never been injured.
Like, wow, yeah. What's nice.
Yeah. I don't know. I have this thought in my mind that like once you've injured something once, it will always be just like worse. Like you can rehab it as much as you want, but it will always be like worse.
Okay. This is another thing that I kind of like tell a lot of my clients with like recurring injuries, because I think chronic injuries are like the most, the hardest to deal with from a provider standpoint, because it's less of a blank manual of like, okay, if this and that, right? You have to like look at the whole kind of history and like your current climbing volume, intensity, what you're doing on the rest days, all that stuff, right? So I always kind of go with the side of if you injure something, if it's a tear and it kind of healed, it's for the most part fine now, but like it always feels a little bit off. It probably healed in a way that it never really got to that 100%. So it always got to like 90, 95%. And then your body got really good at like making up for it, right? And so my job is we want to be continuing to progress in climbing most of the time, right? And so I take a much more kind of a movement-based approach for that end stage rehab, right? Like you can only do so much of like the lifting and like the hangboard stuff. Ultimately, something about how you're climbing is probably causing this recurring injury to happen. So I like to be a little bit more holistic with like, all right, how are we moving? Are we not taking enough weight from our feet, and that's why we're consistently over gripping or something like that, right? If are we like consistently chicken winging our shoulders, right? And some parts of our shoulders are taking more weight than others. We can rehab things all the time. And if you don't actually like change what is getting you in that place in the first place, then it's just going to be a chronic issue. But I think people think that, like what you said, if you injured it once, that thing is just never going to get better again. I think it's more so, why did it happen in the first place? If it's just like a one-off acute injury, or is it an accumulation of how you're climbing? And more often than not, it's something about how you're climbing.
Okay. That is something I will have to think about.
Yeah. And it's so hard to like know on your own, right? And this is not me pitching my own services. I think I do it myself as well. I go to an OT when I have something wrong with myself, because it's hard to take away my own bias, right? So I think understanding that getting frustrated is okay. But like taking a step back and being like, why is this happening is going to be a much better question than how can I like, how can I just rehab this on its own, and like taking that as a vacuum, right? So yeah, I think with all the programming that I do, I always end with doing the hard stuff on the wall, right? Like if you got injured crimping, we will absolutely be doing crimping as part of like your last session.
Yeah, that and makes
so,
sense.
Like, all my sessions are on climbing gyms, so like I have that luxury, like be able to do all these like movement sessions in the gyms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's for like all in-person stuff, but for all my online programming, very much so as part of the program, like, I'll have like open climbing, and I'll say like, I want you to do a max board session. Mm-hmm. And it's part of your rehab.
Okay. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And yeah, I was like thinking back on the injuries I had. I guess like I had a lot of like wrist issues when I was like first starting, and I was like, oh my god, like this is never gonna get better, it like keeps re-injuring. But then I just like, yeah, I haven't really had that since, so that one kind of fixed itself. Now I just have like constant shoulder injuries that always come back up. So yeah, maybe one day if I fix my climbing, that'll fix itself too.
Yeah, or like it's not just like fixing your climbing as in like get better at climbing, it's more so like what are you doing in terms of like
like I'm definitely climbing in a way that's messing it up somehow. I kind of figure that out.
Another thing though, I would say like, yeah, the unfortunately like it's a truth that the older you get, the longer it takes for things to heal. There's just less blood flow to that area. Like youth athletes are just much more malleable, like their bodies can just like, they're like rubber bands, you know. Like I've seen so many cases where like there's like I always measure one side to the other. And like one side will be like half of the other side if there's like a really bad injury. And you know, I see them once or twice in like a couple of weeks, they're like back to 100%. And it's insane. It's nice. Like, oh,
yeah.
Right? It must be nice.
Yeah.
But no, I think when we're dealing mostly with the adult population and you get to that 90%, the job isn't done there. We have to be stronger. So I guess let me share this too real quick. I popped a pulley like 3 years ago. That actually kind of led to me wanting to do this full time. But yeah, so I popped a pulley there, and I knew that physiologically speaking, once the ligament is fully torn, it was a full rupture. It's never going to heal again in terms of like that pulley is gone. If you take a CT scan of me, like I do not have that pulley anymore. However, it is full of just like these kind of like adhesions that build up in the area, and overall your body just gets really good at over time being able to compensate for it. The way I explain it is, let's say this can pull 100 pounds. Because of that injury, even though I did the rehab that I'm supposed to, it can only ever pull 90 pounds. However, that was when I was a V5 climber or V6 climber. Since I've gone up quite a few grades from there, I will now, instead of pulling 100 pounds here, I pull 120. But because of, in all my fingers, let's say, right? But now with that 120 pounds on all the other fingers, this one is only 110. So it's never quite what it could be, but 110 is still better than 100 pounds. That it was perfectly fine years ago. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
So we just need to get to a point where we're like making up the difference by just in continuing to like get stronger and like being past our normal level so that we don't really notice it as much. So that's kind of like my philosophy with it. It's like, it's not a lost cause. Like I, you know, even in the absolute worst case scenario, which most of the time it isn't, right? Like a rupture of a ligament is worst case scenario because that won't heal. But tendons, like muscles, all of those heal quite well, right? And so knowing that and knowing that it could heal, and even if it won't heal like completely, like getting you to a higher threshold level so that you can tolerate these loads, I think just it speaks volume. I think it's a consistent, you can always consistently improve.
Okay, cool. So now going a bit into your own climbing, you climb quite a bit, quite a lot yourself. And you mentioned that you were training for Peruvian Nationals.
I am. Yeah. This is my first time ever making this public. So this is fun.
Yeah. What are like the eligibility requirements for that?
So I wanted to, throw my hand in there. I competed.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
These last month in June, early June, 2 months ago now, yeah. Just to kind of see where I was at. I trained maybe like 2 to 3 months prior up to it, just so I wasn't completely washed.
Okay.
But I kind of like, first time ever doing some type of competition like that, I went in and it's basically like you go into like whatever building it is, and it's complete isolation, right? Like you're kind of locked in with all the training equipment. And then one by one, you just get pulled in. And the requirement, pretty much, you just have to be a citizen of that country. So I have dual citizenship and then qualify either, in some competitions you need like prior entry for it. For Peru, you don't. I don't think most, like, I think in the US you need to qualify to go to nationals by doing like ACS and stuff like that. In Peru, you don't. So I was like completely newcomer, just kind of see what it was about. I kind of saw what the level was, and, I don't think I'm too far off, so I'm taking this year to like really, really train.
Nice. Okay. How did you do in June?
I got 18th.
Oh yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. So you need, I think, top 8 to make finals. Okay. And once you're in finals, again, every country is gonna have like different policies. I believe top 6 make team, I wanna say. So I have a long way to go, but I would say technique wise, I'm in a, like, luckily, like the facilities that I have access to,
right.
One, I'm in multiple facilities, right? I have 5 gyms, but just in the US in general, like the facilities are just like so much more high tech than in Peru, right?
Yeah.
It's still very much a new sport there. So they train a lot on spray boards and like spray walls and stuff like that. And they're very physically strong. Like all of them can do like one arm pull-ups, like no problem. But technique wise, I would say it's, especially on like slab and coordination, it's definitely like a step back from what you would see in like even like a divisionals or definitely like a nationals level event here. Like it's not really that comparable.
So how are you training for it? Do you have like a coach that you work with, or are you doing your own programming?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the barter system.
So, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
So I have done like trades with like 7 or 8 different coaches.
Okay.
I think I feel pretty good about writing my own training program, just like, you know, my understanding of how things work on my end. But the one-to-one kind of private coaching is, I think, super valuable for me. Having someone like pinpoint what I'm doing wrong and just kind of like coach me through it is like really, really good. So I currently, you know, I've worked a lot with a couple coaches like in the area, like more consistently, but a bunch of times I'll do like one-off sessions for bunch of people.
So what's your training look like, or what's like the biggest weakness that you're working on?
Physical strength by far. I thought I was a pretty physical climber, but they are like, they put all their stats in physicality.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy to see. Yeah. So I would say cordo and like coordination moves. I think even where I'm at right now, I think I'm at a level where it's good enough to like make the team. Whereas my physical strength is definitely ways away. So I want to build up a lot more like just contact strength, a lot more explosivity, and just like holding on to really bad holds. That's the other thing. They don't have like the pristine, nice, like frictiony holds that we have here.
Yeah.
So it's just like just squeezing really hard on bad holds.
Yeah. So like at the comp, did they set a lot of like physical stuff that you couldn't do?
Yeah, so like I'm sure you're aware, right? Like usually here there's like one physical boulder and like the other three are like more technique based, right? Like usually a slab, a cordo, whatever, right? There they had three physical boulders.
Oh, dang.
One slab and one cordo.
Oh, there were five.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
For the qualifiers.
Yeah, I would love to see videos of that later if you have any footage of you doing the competition.
The only footage I got was my grandpa taking it, and aww, it's like a little like camcorder. It's really bad, but it's very nice of him.
Well, yeah, best of luck to you this year. It'd be really cool if you made it in. What's like, do you have like a final goal with that? Like make the team, go to like World Cups, or how does that work?
If I make team, I can then go to any of the World Cups, right? So once I do that, I believe there's only two slots per, like IFSC changed this, so it's only two slots per country unless you have people in the top 50, which we don't. So yes, it'll be two per competition. The thing is, Peru doesn't have a lot of budget, so they'll send like the top two people to a few of the comps, and then the rest, they'll run out of money and be like, all right, well, anyone else down the pecking order, if you want to go, you have to like sponsor yourself. And that's where I come in, right?
Yeah.
So I think I'm in a lucky spot where I think I'll definitely take my chance I think definitely they wouldn't sponsor any of like the Asia World Cups. So I would want to go to maybe a couple of the European ones, one of the Asian ones. I think it'd just be super fun as like a getaway. Like when am I ever going to have a chance to like do an event like this and also just like treat it as like vacation, like while I'm there. Plus, also, I think it just kind of looks pretty good from a marketing standpoint, right? That like a climbing-specific PT is also a World Cup competitor. That's kind of cool.
That'd be really cool. It'd be really cool just to like get, like see like where the other competitors are at and then see what the level is like. I think it's a really good experience.
It'd be really fun. Like I said, I think I never thought this would be nearly as possible. So I really only started training like a few months ago to... Yeah, I think everyone kind of hits a plateau at a certain point, right? So to me, that was like the V8, V9 level is where I kind of hit the plateau. And so I think trying to like really push it from here requires a lot of like dedicated training and things like that. So I'm excited to see how far I can push it. And if I can make team, have a really cool experience at a World Cup, I'll definitely take a lot of cool content about it.
No, that would be really sick. Yeah, good luck to you. That'd be awesome. A dream.
It's not going to be until May, so I have quite a few months to train.
No, that's a good amount of time. Yeah, there's a lot that you can do in that amount of time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So let's get into some of the audience submitted questions. The first one, what advice would you give to PT students looking to work with climbers?
I've had like three different cold emails asking me about this.
Okay. Yeah. You can answer it all here.
Yeah. I would say, first of all, like assuming that you're already like in PT school and everything, or trying to get into that, understanding that like probably social media is like the one thing that got my name more out there. So if you are if you like don't really want to use like social media at all, you just have to work a lot harder for like building connections like in that industry in general. But it turns out to be a lot of like, yeah, if you can build connections with like the gyms that you're working at, that helps a lot. That's like, you're gonna make a lot of people like within that community like pretty happy with what you're offering. Also, there's a lot of continuing education classes that you can take, because as I said, there's not that much focus on fingers and hands on physical therapy school. So I would definitely recommend doing like continuing education classes. There's a lot of great resources out there. I took a class with Jerry Baggy. He's known, I believe, as a climbing doctor on Instagram. So he offers like courses for PTs to take, or actually PT students as well can take it. And it's basically like PT for climbers specifically. That's what the course is. So yeah, I took that course. I took a couple other stuff that is like more like manual driven, more for hands and wrists, stuff like that. So it required a lot of like deep research on my end, because it's not something that gets taught too much in school. And then really applying that with the local community in my gym first. Eventually social media started like getting my name more out there, and then kind of grew from there. But it was a grind. I would say I posted things on my social media, started I believe February of 2022, and I didn't see my first like client until I think it was like October of that year.
Wow, yeah. Social media is a grind. I think we all know that.
Media is a grind.
It is not so easy. Okay, so next one. What are the pillars of a strong climbing warm-up?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, you can do so many things for a warm-up. I think if I were to classify things, if you are warming, like getting some blood flow into your whole body, whether that's cardio, whether that's like doing some like jumping jacks or whatever, or just doing some like light pull-ups, just things to like be at a much lower level than what you're normally pulling, doing that. You can do like just like on the wall, just like doing a traverse, like that works okay too. My big gripe is you got to warm up to what you're going to be climbing that day, especially if you have a particular project in mind. That's why I don't like the idea of like, this is like my one warm up every time. I change up what I want to do based on what I want to work on that day. So in my training, I have a coordination day, a slab day, and a like two physical strength days. The warm up for those three classifications are actually a good bit different. I hit the pillars of like getting some blood flow in my body, getting some light movement by doing some like, you know, I'll do like five pull ups. I'll do like a couple explosive pull ups, maybe a couple push ups just to get some blood flow everywhere. And once I hit that, that's like kind of the only similarity. After that, if you're going for a more kind of like movement based day, focus a lot more on like mobility. I like active mobility before passive. And then if you're going to be doing a lot of like coordination movements, definitely you got to be doing some type of like dynamic pull up or like some type of like explosive thing before you get into that project. And then if you're just going to be like climbing on crimps all the time, like spend some time on handboard, right? As long as we're kind of like hitting things at a lower level from what you're going to be climbing that day. And if your day is just like, oh, I just want to climb for fun. Yeah. Do little light hangboard. Just get some blood flow there. Some active mobility, some active stretches, right? And then just like doing some regular pull-up training, maybe a couple push-ups just to warm the pressing motions. And don't neglect the legs. I think that's another big one. I always include a couple pistol squats in my warm-up.
A couple pistol squats. Okay. I need to warm up into a pistol squat. So
do just like sit to stand. I like to have it like a block. That just like stand and sit down from there.
I guess like what about warm-ups for like competitors in ISO? I find it so hard to like warm up in ISO where you don't really have like a big space and then you have to like be prepared for anything. That's like, yeah, that's a hard warm-up for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to what I just said, right? Of like, if you know that you're going to be doing a lot of like dynamic stuff, you got to make makeups on the wall. So like, I saw this so much at Nationals, and the coaches do such a cool job of this. Like, these are people who are going to be doing V10 plus boulders in a couple minutes or like in an hour, right? And so with the things that are available to them, they're like going from one hold to a boulder that is like has nothing to do with it, right? Just like different crosses, but just making like makeups of moves that I think will get the body moving in the right way. It's going to be super cool. So I usually spend like 5 minutes on the spray wall. If your gym doesn't have a spray wall, I would just do like some like light, like, you know, whatever grades you climb, like a grade or two below your flash level. climb it at least once very static and once fast using momentum.
Okay, cool. Last question. This is a little bit general, so I'm trying to think of how to ask this. Well, so the question itself is, what exercises do you recommend for injury prevention? Of course, there's a bunch of different exercises for whatever injury you're trying to do. So maybe pick like two most common like comp injuries and what exercises you would suggest for strengthening those.
For specifically for comp climbers?
We could just do like climbing in general.
The most common thing I see is fingers. So I think if you don't do some type of hangboard or like block pickups as part of your warm-up, you absolutely should. My biggest gripe is when you just like warm up on like, you know, B0 to 2s on jugs and then you hop into a crimpy climb after that. You did not warm up your fingers at all, right? Like you're just pulling on like bucket handles. So that doesn't do anything to your actually pulleys and flexor tendons. So yeah, if you don't already do some type of hangboard, let's definitely incorporate that. There's a cool study that was posted that says that the most optimal, meaning optimal, they define as the chance of injuring that tissue is negligible or with more warm up, it does not make it more warm, if that makes sense. Like it's as warm as it can get. That's how they define optimal. Like the tissue has as much blood flow as it wants to get, as it can get. And so at that point to you doing 30 more minutes of climbing, it's not any more warm. So that's how they define that. And they said that to get to that point was between 100 and 120 moves.
Whoa, okay.
So, and like with move, it can be like, yeah, just like you're on a wall and like, you know, 50 to 60 moves per hand. That's like your optimal warm up, right? And so I think that just puts them into perspective of like, we probably don't do enough of, this is for specifically for pulleys. So being that pulleys is probably the most common adult injury that I see.
So like 100 to 120 moves of like crimpy, like smaller edge moves, I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it like super small edge, but sure, like any where you're like actually like engaging in, yeah. Yeah. And so you can do that. You can, instead of just doing so many moves like that, you can do a lot on the hangboard, you know? And you know, like if you do like a 7-on, 3-off repeater, how can you classify 7 seconds as like one move, right? It's so hard to like, then we're like getting super like picky with this type of stuff. But I think it just helps to pose a bit more of like a bigger picture that we more likely than not don't warm up the actual flexor tendon enough before we get into our performance. So keep that in mind. Just do like a few hangs on the hangboard, or if most of your warmup happens on the wall, just make sure you're intentional about like pulling in. And you can like pull in and grab, like crimp a juggy hold, right? Just like you have to be intentional with it.
What about like what's like the most common comp injury and exercise you would recommend for that?
I think shoulders.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you're a fan of shoulders.
Well, oh, yeah, it's just that my shoulder is always injured. So if I could, you know, get an exercise for that, that'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a ton of like shoulder rotator cuff strengthening stuff. I think I see a lot of people like do like this stuff with the band or like external rotation. Those are all good for warming up those muscles to start firing. But I do think most of the time shoulder injuries happen from dynamic movement or just moves that are like more three-dimensional. And so what I mean by that is like if you're like at a Gaston and you're like pulling, this way, but gravity's pulling you down. So there's a lot of kind of forces acting on the shoulder. And by doing just like one move against resistance, you're just working one axis, right? And the shoulder moves in all three axes. So because it's such a movable joint, like fingers only bend, right? And extend. The shoulders can go forward, side, and then rotate. Right. So because of that, it makes warming up the shoulder a little bit more nuanced and that you shouldn't just work one move at a time. Does that make sense? Like one move at a time being like if you attach a band here and you go against the band, that's one axis. Right. Right. So what I would suggest is taking like a band and like pushing against it. Like if there's like a loop or something like that, and then adding other movements. So like you can go up, you can go to the side. But doing the same type of motion of external rotation, because that's what you're using a lot of to keep you on the wall, but in different positions with movement.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
I like that. I remember that one. And that's a big one for injury prevention.
Okay, perfect.
And then going even a little further, like on the wall, like do some like little jumps to jugs and just kind of like, or jump to a bar, right? Just the fact that you're like trying to activate with zero lag, right?
Mm.
It will help.
All right. Well, that's all the questions I had for today then. Thanks for joining me. Any last minute like thoughts or words of wisdom you want to get out there?
No, this is really fun. I think just the more on if you want to be like for the students or people that want to be in climbing PT, I think it's a really cool niche that I've built out for myself. And if that's something that you want to like follow, like for sure do. I think we need more climbing specific PTs. I'm hoping that this becomes I think the sport has grown a lot, but I hope it becomes like an NCAA sport at some point. And then when that happens, there's a lot more money in the game. And then, you know, we can actually, we should be having a lot more attention to like health of athletes. And so hopefully this is the beginning of something really cool. And I'm glad that I'm taking part of it, hopefully a little bit.
Awesome. Okay. And where can people find you?
So on Instagram, I'm at climbing.rehab. And my website is climbingrehab.com. Super easy to remember.
Nice handle. I feel like that's a hard one to get.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a little dot because I think climbing was taken.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, awesome. Thank you again. It was amazing to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jenny. How's it going?
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed. Otherwise, you are a super fake climber. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, I'd appreciate if you rate it 5 stars and you can continue the discussion on the free competition climbing Discord linked in the description. Thanks again for listening.